Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking about health power. And I would say that this is going to be a story that I think is really going to surprise you, because it has a story of sadness that we're going to be sharing with you, that out of what would have been considered very, very negative has evolved. A woman's passion and her determined attitude of being able to make a difference in people's lives by helping them to understand how important their health is and how what you eat does make a difference. I want to welcome to the airwaves Mona Magan, and I want to say thank you so much for being my guest today.
It's a pleasure being your guest, Donna. Thank you.
Now, you're in my own home turf, which is in the state of Washington, Western Washington, and you're a woman that has traveled a journey that I don't think anybody ever would want to travel, and that had to do with your son. Let's talk about your son for a minute, because I think his story and what happened with him is very, very important.
Well, my son, he passed away at the age of 26 from undiagnosed diabetes. And you're right that I was inspired to write this book after going through the grieving process. But just a little bit of background, I want people to know that I'm not a chef and it's not really a cookbook. I have been an educator, and I have a doctorate in special education, and the tagline under the book is A Friendly Guide to Brown Bagging as a Better Way to Lunch. And so I just want people to know I'm not the chef, Dr. Megan, or whatever. So, but when, after my son passed away at the age of 26, we had an eight-week autopsy, and it came out to undiagnosed diabetes. There was none in the family, and he had a normal glucose reading 2 years prior when it was his last physical. So I, as an educator and as a grieving mother, thought I needed to, you know, do something and share my passion about how important eating is. And I took lunch as just one segment of our day, which hopefully will continue at breakfast and dinner as well.
Now, this to me was interesting. 8 weeks to mm-hmm. do an autopsy. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't think that many people are aware of what goes on with an autopsy. Now, did you have to make this request?
No.
To do it?
No, the state made the request because they couldn't find anything wrong. Well, they suspect when a 26-year-old just passes away, he didn't show up from work, and he was working at his cousin's business, and the next day his cousin went to see what was going on, and there he was in his bed, and he had died. And they, of course, suspected drugs and alcohol and homicide, or all the natural things they
sure,
called.
Sure, first thing that comes in their head.
Right. And so they went through the expense of doing an eight-week autopsy, and then it came out with a huge, on his death certificate, is undiagnosed diabetes.
All right, let's address a couple of questions here. Your book, What Are You Doing for Lunch, is wonderful, and I want to get into some of the things in the book. But I think that this is important, because diabetes, I know in my own husband's family, it was on the mother's side of the family, not the father's side, and he came from a sizable family. There were 10 children that she gave birth to, and half of them, a good half of them, all ended up with diabetes. The others were able to avoid getting it because of their dietary pattern. It's just, they didn't end up with the same chemistry makeup.
Mm-hmm.
tell us what it was that with diabetes, because I have seen people. I know what happens when they get diabetes. If they don't pay attention, they can get gangrene, their legs will rot, they can lose their vision. I mean, this is really an insidious condition. But mm-hmm. your son was 26. You find out about this through the autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
How was it that it affected him physically, that it caused his death? I mean, there's people that are listening to this that are going to say, I don't understand this. Well, diabetes. I've got four or five friends that have diabetes. They have insulin.
Right, but he didn't know he had it. And we, like I said, he went to the doctor for a physical. It was 2 years ago. He was just going on, and he didn't know he had it. And there was no signs that he had it, and there was no history of it in our families. So,
well, did it affect his heart, or did it close down his internal organs?
All they found was an insulin reading from part of some fluid in his eye, because it was 8 weeks after he passed away,
mm-hmm.
and that's how they diagnosed it. And I checked with physicians, and, you know, they said that's it, you know, it. And I didn't personally want to get into figuring all what ifs, because you go through
sure.
a lot of that anyway, and that's why even the cookbook is not a diabetic cookbook. It has, it's healthier eating, and it's sort of healthier. It's not the healthiest or no sugar. And I really wanted, again, to be more of a guide to people moving away from fast food and into whole foods, and it's okay to make your lunch. You're not going to look like you can't afford to go out to eat and all of that kind of stuff that sometimes
mm-hmm.
gets into lunch behaviors.
Well, and I think that was one of the points in your book that you brought out. Your son, you felt, had bad eating habits, which so many
mm-hmm.
people in today's world, they don't think. And
right,
it's not something we're aware of. I was talking with a young woman just yesterday, and she has certain physical conditions, and they're all due to diet.
Mm-hmm.
And she
mm-hmm.
said she's become aware of that. And I think in today's world, that's where it's significant, people like yourself, Mona,
mm-hmm.
that are not going out there and beating an extremist drum.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying be mindful, be aware.
Right, right.
Because a member of my family was affected. There was nothing in family history, nothing at all. But this is what was found out. So we don't want to come from a positioning of fear, because that's automatically very intimidating and very scary.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that. It's be aware. Your body is something to be respected.
Mm-hmm.
Honor it, no matter what your age. So
exactly.
That wellness that is your right to have is something that you can enjoy. Now, because of your educational background, and I love the cover of your book. It shows
Thank
a brown
you.
Bag, and you've got all of these little sticky notes. It says, fresh whole foods, no cooking experience required, 15-minute recipe, save $300 in 3 months, delicious, satisfying meal. And this is something that is so important, and I liked your comment about don't feel that this is a miser's way of doing things, that this is something that you need to disassociate from. There's nothing wrong with taking your own lunch and making sure that you are going to have the foods that you need. It's okay to do that. And I really think that that's important, because that gives us power over ourselves and what we eat. Now, when you were doing the research, or when you were doing your book, putting
right.
it together, what made you determine, because these things are so quick and easy, and you
mm-hmm.
you even have a section in your book where you say, look at how much money you can save. My goodness, you go out to lunch. I was talking about this with a friend. I said, if you go out to lunch on average in a restaurant, and this is not putting restaurants down, I like to eat out just as much as anybody else does, but we were chatting about this, and I said, it can cost you a minimum of $10. And we're not talking about a whole bunch of food. This is
mm-hmm.
just that plus the tip, and you have spent $10. So these are things that when you start tallying them up can add up to quite a bit. So
mm-hmm.
if you, and just what you do in your book, you say, what if you spent that $10 on certain foods or planned accordingly, how much could you save? And you show that in your book. And that's a big issue with people today. How did you do your evaluation on all of this? Because you've got so much information here. I mean, you've got a listing of all kinds of things.
Well, what I did was I started out by asking questions about what people are really doing for lunch and then why they're not bringing their own lunch to either school or work. And I came up with, I don't have time. That was the biggest issue. So I knew I wanted to find and do things that really didn't require much time. And then the other one was, I don't know what to make, and it's never in the house when I need it. And so then, you know, I thought, okay, well, how could somebody do that? And then, you know, I did different lunch styles, which we can talk about later, but there's a grab-and-go lunch style, which I happen to be myself. I like to just go to the refrigerator and either take leftovers or yogurt and make a little grab-and-go lunch. But I can't cook was another thing. I don't know how to cook. I don't have things in the house. I don't, you know, all that stuff. And then, like I mentioned earlier, people where I work go out to eat all the time, and I want to be part of the group. So I made a lunch style at the end, the last one called Social Networker, where you get a group together and say, hey, how about if we make five lunches? I'll make five on Monday, you make five on Tuesday, and, you know, we'll share lunches. Even if it's, we do it twice a week or three times a week, you know, you're still saving money. And you're getting the social. You can go to a park if it's nice weather and not sit and stand in a line and, you know, be in a crowded place. So, and spend a lot of money. And I know the economy, and $10, when I started the book, that was right. But now, if you go out to lunch, it's almost like $15. You know, things are just going up. So other people say, oh, when I bring a lunch, it's all soggy. And, you know, well, you know, there's incredible things now that you can get for lunch containers. And, you know, I put some websites in the book that you can do it. So those are the major reasons why people are saying they don't. And then I knew that people didn't realize how the health version. So I have a contributing author who is a nurse and a PhD researcher. And so she did a simple description of something that's healthy about the recipe. And again, it's they're not the healthiest recipes, but they're healthier than a lot of food. Well, and then I got the software to do the analysis, so you can see how many calories, what's the sodium, what's the fat content. And, you know, I was just amazed that, you know, I have peanut butter and jelly, and I'm like, wow, look at that sugar from the jelly. You know, I had no idea.
But it's an interesting thing. Diabetes, often, when people will talk about it, they'll think that you eliminate sugar. No, you're dealing with insulin. Glucose is important for the brain. If you don't have enough glucose, your brain will shut down.
Right.
And so the body is a phenomenal machine, and it's all about balance. Again, that's what I like about your material. It's not being an extremist. And I'll share with you just something that I can remember reading many, many years ago, and I don't remember the name of the doctor in France. The diabetes in France was a very common condition, and they didn't know what they know today. But there was a physician who, when the revolution was going on and times were really tough and they were would be in what we would call a depression and there was a lot of hunger, the one thing that he noticed with patients is when they couldn't get a hold of certain things, like white flour, which bread was the mainstay for a lot of poor people, and when that was no longer available and they had to go to the grains that were coarser, that hadn't been processed because the white flour had been something that only the wealthy could afford, and generally, so that was considered a luxury item, the diabetes literally almost disappeared. He didn't have patients coming in with symptoms. Now, this goes back a long time ago, hundreds of years ago. And he had noticed this, and it was noted, but nobody really paid attention. And here we are today recognizing that you have to have a balanced diet. And in this country, we have the good fortune of having fresh fruits and vegetables almost all year round. I can remember being in parts of the country at times when you couldn't get this fresh fruit. Now, I'm not that old, but I mean, the transportation just wasn't available to get stuff. Well, today, it's different. You can go into any store, and you will find locally grown vegetables. You'll find all kinds of foods, even from around the world. So this is what makes your book so nice, because people don't have to not have variety, number one, which I think is very important. And number two, realizing, just as you've mentioned, you can have the social interaction. And I think it is a wonderful thing to be able to go to lunch with people, have that social interaction. But we're all looking at how can we take care of those expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out once a week even, and you're mm-hmm. spending $25 for a meal, and that meal, yes, it was fun, it was great, but you tally that up, and some people are going out five times a week.
Mm-hmm.
You tally those things up. And before you know it, you can look at the outlay of money. And if you're in a financial position where that's comfortable for you, great. But if you're saying, gee, I've got bills to pay or other things, and I need to save some money, this can make a shift. And you don't have to be alienated in doing that shift. So I really think that your comments, your suggestions in here are just absolutely wonderful. You have some vegetarian things if people want to do vegetarian, and it wouldn't take much if you had people that were vegetarian and then they decided they wanted to add some meat. You can do that. You can make it that easily, just very easily. Let's talk about the social network or group recipes. And I do want my listeners to know that you have this broken down by soups, salads, main course, sandwiches and wraps, smoothies, snacks, and group recipes, which we're going to talk about here for just a minute. You save money. Your health is going to be better. Your energy, if you're working, is going to be better. It's really going to come out. Let's talk about a salad that is really a favorite with people, and that's the Cobb salad.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is one of the most popular. Every restaurant I've ever gone to always has some kind of Cobb salad. People just love it.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it was one of the reasons I put it in, because it is a popular, and it's always really expensive in a restaurant.
So let's talk about this, because you broke it down. It takes, you know, it's about 15 minutes for prep and cook time. It serves five people. And it's just loaded with nutrition, and it's so, so good. Now, first of all, let me just give the ingredients she has here. And this is so simple. It really is. And this is the best time of the year. You have these wonderful fresh lettuces. You can take a head of romaine lettuce, a head of Boston or red leaf lettuce, one package of sliced bacon. If you don't want the regular bacon, then you can use turkey bacon. Two ripe avocados. You want to peel them and cut them in small pieces. Two hard-boiled eggs, finely chopped. Two tomatoes chopped. And you can remove the pulp. If you don't want a lot of that excess moisture, you can, before you chop your tomatoes, remove the seeds and the inner pulp. Save it for your spaghetti sauce if you want. And then you need two whole skinless, boneless chicken breasts or one cup of cooked chicken or whatever is your favorite meat, whatever you want to put in. And that's what you've got here. And then the salad dressing, you have a homemade salad dressing. It's 2/3 of a cup of red wine vinegar, 2 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, 1 cup of olive oil, 1 cup of finely grated blue cheese. And if you don't like blue cheese, well, you can substitute something else if you like. 2 teaspoons of sugar, salt, and pepper, and you mix it in a jar with a lid and shake it. Voila, you've got this wonderful, wonderful salad. Now, how would you recommend, if you were going to brown bag for five people, I really liked your suggestion here, what would you do so that if you were all going to meet in a park, how would you set this up to transport it so that everything could be done for each of those servings?
Well, what I did in the directions, that we were the five people, I have person one, person two, person three in the book, and they each have their specific role. And if you each pack up what you brought and you put it on the table, and it's, you know, you have your plates and your utensils, the individual person will then fix it with all the different ingredients. It's not going to be served to you. But if you don't really want the chicken, you leave the chicken out. If you want more tomatoes, you know, you put it in. You make your own Cobb salad.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that's what you would recommend then for that lunch.
Yeah, And again, every recipe you can substitute and you can change. They're all just so basic and easy to do, and that's what I encourage people to do. It's like, to me, and I refer to it in the book, it's like starting an exercise program. You just want to do something, you know, jump in. If you want to learn how to swim, you can't just be reading about it. You have to kind of get in the water and try it. And whatever is the way that best for you to try it, get in there and try it, and then, you know, stick with it for 30 days. That's what a new behavior is usually 30 days to really set in. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I mentioned, don't feel you have to necessarily do it every day. Look at your calendar. There might be certain meetings that you have to go to. It's definitely not something you want to bring a brown bag to. It's a lunch meeting. And, you know, that's okay. But consider this as an important part of your life, that it is, you know, helping your body.
Now, in your book, before we share another recipe, I found that you have a section in your book, and it's dealing with research, and you have a wonderful resource, listing of resources in your book, and especially for college students. I think for college students, this is so significant because so many parents get so anxious because the kids are busy, they're running from this class to another class, and they just grab whatever, you know, it could be a bag of chips, and that's going to do me until dinner. And good nutrition is not something they typically will pay attention to. They're too busy being students and being with their buddies. But you've got a resource here that offers tips and recipes for lunches for college students. And you also had a shopper's guide to pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
And you encourage buying organic, which a lot of people do because they don't use pesticides. But you have information here, resources, where you can make choices
mm-hmm.
that are going to be more balanced for the dietary needs that we all have, improving your health, but also enjoying food. I think that is something, with my Italian background, that is something that the Italians really have down.
Right.
They really enjoy their food. If it's a piece of cheese and a cracker and a glass of wine, they enjoy it. And
mm-hmm.
it's the socializing that has always been very important in that cultural environment.
Mm-hmm.
And good food, we need to remember, this isn't something, we don't want to hate food. We want to be able to enjoy it and to savor it. And time, convenience, flexibility, oh my goodness, we've got so many wonderful things to work with, but hey, I know how guilty I have been many times of just saying, oh, I don't have time for this, mm-hmm. and grabbing something. And it does take planning. It does take an orientation of how can you make your plans. And when you have a family, when you've got two or three kids and you're working full time,
mm-hmm.
that little bit of planning can go a long way, even if they all have different taste interests.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that can be done.
And that's one of the reasons why I put a mobile website on my website to download the grab-and-go list, because if you're in a supermarket, a lot of people have smartphones with them, and this was a suggestion given to me by somebody who never did lunch. He said, oh, I just get into a supermarket, I don't know what to get, and then I never think of lunch. Why don't you just, you know, get it on my smartphone? So anyway, you know, you can get the grab-and-go list, and you don't even have to have the book. You can just download the grab-and-go list from the website and, you know, don't get lost and not think about your lunch.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Now, you have in here a smoothie, and it's called Fruit and Greens Smoothie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really astonished that you put kale in there.
Oh, I know. I was too.
It's a cup of apple juice, one banana peeled, one mango pitted and peeled, 5 kale leaves, and kale is one of the most nutritious greens
mm-hmm.
that you could ever eat, or you can use other greens, and you want to remove the stems before you put it in the juicer or blender, add a cup of water, zoom.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nutritional powerhouse right there.
It is. It is, and it really, you can't taste the greens for people who don't like the greens. It tastes really good. Good juice, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty amazing. And I'm just getting more into juicing myself because I am, like I started out saying, I am not the chef that did everything right in the kitchen, you know, in terms of healthy foods. But smoothies are really a great, fast way of getting good nutrition.
And you have information in here like roast beef for sandwiches, how to fix the roast beef so you can have it prepared, so you just slice it and it's ready to go. You have homemade meatballs, beef and tomato stew. You've got 15-minute hummus that costs 50 cents a serving. 50 cents a serving. And this is how simple it is. One can of garbanzo beans, you drain them, save the liquid. You have a garlic clove that you've peeled and you chop up, a teaspoon of salt, a half a teaspoon of pepper, a tablespoon of olive oil, 2 teaspoons of ground cumin. Put in a food processor or a blender, blend it on low speed, and if it's too thick, add some of the liquid from the canned garbanzo beans and thin it out to whatever you like. And my goodness, if you're not wanting to have a lot of carbs, use lettuce leaves or celery or carrots to dip into it. But this is great. This
great.
Is
yeah. Or if you want to just wrap it up, I'm having a lunch for 14 after our conversation, and that's one of the things I'm going to make is a hummus wrap. You just put some tomatoes and lettuce, and you put it on a wrap, and you have the hummus, and I've guaranteed everybody likes it. You know, well, this is so good.
Well, see, and it's things like this that make a difference. Oh, and you've got a recipe in here for a chicken tortilla soup. I don't know about you, but I love Mexican food. Well, that can be so high in starch because, you know, you have a lot of these and also a lot of fat. The old-fashioned way of making refried beans is using a lot of fat.
Lard.
And not that lard's bad for you because people used it for generations and didn't have any major problems with it. But in our world today, that's not something that people typically will use. And using that much fat, we're not working as hard physically as the people did years ago when that was available. But this is so easy. And this is marvelous because you could put it in a crock pot if you wanted to. Just put everything in a crock pot. Just let it go. Let it do its work while you're gone. I like crock pots, by the way. 3 cups of uncooked boneless chicken pieces. Dark white meat doesn't make any difference. 2 13-ounce cans of black beans with liquid, 2 15-ounce cans of stewed tomato with liquid, 1 cup of mild or medium salsa, 1 15-ounce can of tomato sauce, and 1 large bag of corn chips. Now, excepting the corn chips, you can put everything into the one container, and like I said, with a crock pot, just set it and go.
Right.
And here you've got it to when you serve it. It's perfect for a party, really. This is something
I use it all the time for guests. And you put the corn chips in the bowl, and then they just pour the crock pot stuff on top of the corn chips. If you want to use corn chips, if you don't, you don't have to.
You can use any of your chips, any of the crispy
things. Rice, you could put brown rice in the bowl, too. You know, that's,
well, that brings up something interesting. If you're having a gathering at your house, and you can double, triple, quadruple this recipe. You can have sour cream on the side. You can have your favorite shredded cheeses. You can have more jalapenos. Somebody wanted that. I mean, there's a lot of things that just could go right into the soup.
And I didn't make it very spicy because the people who like really spicy food could always add their spice. And again, it's the educator in me. I want people to be creative and enjoy the process of doing it, too. It's not only eating it, but it's fun. It gets to be fun once you have your ingredients and then you taste the results.
Oh, I agree. This has just been delightful, Mona. I really want to encourage people to go to your website, whatareyoudoingforlunch.com. She has a blog. She's got all kinds of information there. And you can even download the information. You don't have to have the book with you. She's got all of these wonderful things available for you. So go to her website, whatareyoudoingforlunch.com. Mona Meghan, and its last name is spelled M-E-I-G-H-A-N. She and along with Sarah DeHart have put together an absolutely delightful book on how, one, you can save money, two, enjoy good food, 3, maintain health and support the health of those that maybe you work with or even in your family, and they don't even know that you're doing that. Wouldn't that be a great way to go? I think so. Mona, thank you for being my guest today. It's been a delight having you, and I wish you continued success with your book.
Thank you so much, Donna. It was a pleasure being your guest.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. And when we come back, we are going to be chatting with a wonderful lady. Her name is Martha Piper. And, well, we'll tell you more about the book in just a moment. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
We have a delightful guest. Her name is Martha. I'm sorry, Martha. Didn't mean to do that to you. Piper, and she has put together this wonderful book for children called Mommy, Daddy, I Had a Bad Dream. And when I got the book, I really was absolutely surprised by the content of the story, the beautiful artwork, and what a wonderful, wonderful thing this is for children to inspire them to learn how to solve problems. Martha, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I really was surprised when I got your book, and I love children's books. I'm a children's author myself. And for you to put this story together, I would love to know the background behind it. What stimulated this charming story for children and use of kangaroos as the primary characters, not teddy bears, you know, like Goldilocks and the Three Teddy Bears. It's kangaroos. Give us a little bit of the background on that.
Sure. I've written a parenting book called Smart Love, and so I've had a lot to do with helping parents. And an adult self-help book called Addicted to Unhappiness. And my daughter kept saying to me, you write for parents, you write for adults, why won't you write for children? And so finally I thought, you know, I would like to try my hand at that. And I looked at the different books that were available, and I realized that the whole topic of children's dreams is hardly addressed in the children's literature. And to the extent it is, it didn't seem helpful because it's all focused on telling children there's nothing scary under the bed or in the closet. And to children, there is something very scary, and it sends them into their parents' room in the middle of the night. So I wanted to write a book for children that would actually empower them to understand their dreams, and so they wouldn't have to feel so helpless.
Well, the artwork in this is just exquisite, and I love the kangaroos. Absolutely,
yes,
love the ruse.
My illustrator, Joe Gershman, is just terrific, and we had a lot of fun peopling the book with Australian animals, and so that was just an added enjoyment to writing the book. But we really wanted to show children that, as the father kangaroo says to his son when he has a bad dream, dreams are stories we tell ourselves for a reason. We just have to understand the reason, and they can figure it out.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I liked about this story. It wasn't what I would call compartmentalized. There are so many subtle nuances that are in this book that I just really like. There's not a family around that when there's the one child and then a second child comes into the picture, there's sibling rivalry, there's all kinds of things that can go on. And there's these dreams that little Joey, the little boy kangaroo, has, and it comes through his dreams. And one of the things he's dealing with is that he just wishes his new baby sister would just go away. Because
right.
Mommy's attention is not on him anymore. She gives him attention, but she's got this newborn. And he just doesn't like that. Well, that's a very normal feeling. That's not an abnormal feeling. And so when he would share his dreams, this is the wonderful way that you portray this. There is this aspect of love, unconditional love, that is demonstrated by the kangaroo parents, where it's not a judgment. They openly are willing to listen to a child's dreams. And so many times, I mean, I look back on my own life when I was younger, and I'm sure you had it too. People say, oh, that's the stupidest thing. It's just a dumb dream. Ignore it. But that's not what these little kangaroo, not little, they're big kangaroos, that they do with their children. They listen. They listen.
Exactly. And we try to show that that dreams are stories we tell ourselves for a reason, and the reason is often unfinished emotional business from the day before. So Joey felt guilty about his sibling rivalry and his wish that his sister would go away, and his parents can show him that that's normal, that all children feel that way sometimes. It doesn't mean he doesn't love them, but it resulted in this dream in which this judge, who's a cassowary, which is another Australian animal, takes away his dessert for 3 days. And once Joey understands that, then he can go back to sleep and feel comforted. And the other dreams that he has are also the result of sort of everyday experiences children have, being ill, not being able to go to a party, or a spat with a friend, or not wanting to go to bed. And by the last dream, Joey actually can understand it himself. He can make sense of why he had it and put himself back to sleep. And he's very proud of that. And, of course, his parents are delighted.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I love, too, about your book, you have the most exquisite illustration that the little boy is being hugged by his dad. And I think it is so sad that in society today, that there is, you don't touch children. I am really very concerned about this. And I know people are going to hear my statement and say, oh, Donna, of course we hug our children. Of course we do this. But I had an experience with a little boy. He's less than 2 years old. And he toddles over to me, and I was talking with his father. We were out, his dad was gardening, and we were just kibitzing. And when I got ready to say goodbye, he toddled over, and he wanted a hug. Now, if it had been a male, being female, there was no concern. But if it had been a male, there might have been concern. I don't think with his family there would have been. But I think it's so sad. And that's what I like, is that the hugs, the love, all of this is here. We hear some, you know, we hear stories about people that don't have right behavior. But instead of coming from a point of fear, you're coming from the point of understand that love can be given unconditionally. Hugs are okay. This is a good thing. And facing the fear, I think, is something, too, that you bring out quite nicely.
Absolutely. And that's part of our whole smart love approach to parenting, is that you cannot love your children too much, that it's nothing but growth-promoting and wonderful for parent and child. And in one of Joey's dreams where he doesn't want to go to bed, and then he has this dream where he grows and grows and he gets so big that he can play all night, but then he's too big for a hug with his dad. And so he runs into bed with him and says, Daddy, can I have a hug? I had this bad dream that I was too big for a hug. And so I think that it's important, too, that, as you said, that the father is affectionate and not worried about being affectionate. And mm-hmm. he is all through the book. Very loving and very kind.
And I think the whole feeling of family here, I think that too often we fail to recognize that with every aspect of childhood, there are these things that children are absorbing like little sponges. And parenting, we're there to be a guide factor. And we try to protect, but in trying to overprotect, we deny a child the right of exploring themselves many times. We want to put them in a little plastic container sometimes, I think, so that they won't ever be touched by life. And that's another aspect of your story, that not only are they going to be living experiences, but Mama and Daddy Kangaroo say, it's okay for you to have these experiences. Let's talk about it. And how do you think you can handle it? Which encourages a child to problem solve. It encourages a child to think. And so many times I feel like we're dumbing down our process, trying to compartmentalize everything for kids.
Right, and the traditional way of showing, of responding to children's dreams, which is to say there's nothing under the bed, is an example of that dumbing down, because it doesn't address the real issue, which is, why does a child have that dream? Let's help them figure it out. And that's, of course, what this book does for children. And so I totally agree with you that the function of parents is to let children explore the world and then come back with the good things and the upsetting things into their arms and talk about them and make sense of them.
Mm-hmm. And I love how you show how Joey, after he goes through these processes where he's crying at times and he's confused, but he has a new friend and he begins to trust himself. And I think that that is a process that everyone has to learn. You have to trust yourself, have confidence in yourself. And that's part of what I think good parenting is, because we are all wanting to parent so that our children will be able to go out in the world, be responsible adults, be contributing to the betterment of life, but they're going to have to stand on their own 2 feet. We are not going to be the ones that are going to carry them on. They have to stand on their own. And I think it's a two-way process. I think parents can learn from their children. I think children can learn from the parents. And life isn't a perfect anything. It's always going to have ups and downs. And that's the joy, I think, that your book, Mommy, Daddy, I Had a Bad Dream, brings to life's table. I really think it's marvelous. And, of course, I'm really supportive of reading, and the visual with this book is exquisite, absolutely marvelous. Martha, what is your website that people can go to find out more about your wonderful materials that you've written about?
www.mommydaddyihadabaddream.com.
mommydaddyihadabaddream.com.
Right.
For parents, would you have a comment before we close out our chat today that you would like to share?
I just think that the most important thing is to be available to your children, to realize that children do as we do, not as we say. So if we love them and we hug them and we're available to listen to them, which is really important, then children will copy us and they will grow up to be people who are caring toward themselves and compassionate toward others. And it's the most important way to really raise children.
Well, I think your book goes a long way to saying that, and I think your daughter was very wise in encouraging you to write it. You have a beautiful, beautiful publication here. I really think that if you know of someone that's become a new parent, if you have someone that maybe has children of different ages and they just go, I'm just going insane, I just don't know what to do, this is a marvelous book to be able to share. And I think that it's something you'd want to keep in your library so that your grandkids, your great-grandkids, when they come along, by golly, you're going to have things to share with them. Mommy, Daddy, I Had a Bad Dream. Martha Piper, her last name is spelled P-I-E-P-E-R. Check out her website, mommydaddyihadabaddream.com. It's absolutely delightful. Martha, thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure. This is Donna Siebel. We are going to take a break for just a moment, and then we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Siebel. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprisin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprisin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprisin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. By the way, for those of you in Washington, and telephone lines are open, 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. For those of you that are in the state of Washington, I would like to encourage you, if you have nothing to do in the first three weekends of August, won't you join us at the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair? This is being held at the Kelly Farm in Bonnie Lake. I have five passes left, and you and your family could have a free pass. And if you would like to get in touch with me so that you can get your free family pass for two adults and two children, call me at my office, 253-582-5604, and we'll get it off in the mail to you right away. Now, if you want more information on this fabulous event, check out Washington Fair, FAIRE.com, and you'll have all the details, directions, and so much information about all of the special events that go on those first three weekends in August. And I'm going to be there. I'll be in my booth. You'll recognize it. There are the bright yellow banners with the gigantic red lions on them. And I will be there doing many consultations. I'll have books. I'll have some other things. It's really just going to be an absolutely fabulous event. So come by. Say hello. I would love to meet you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. I'm going to be showing the listing of my upcoming guests for next month. That will be going out on the 1st. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about nature, spirits, spirit guides, and ghosts. Atala Dorothy is going to be, or I should say, excuse me, I reversed her name. It's Dorothy Atala. She's going to be with us. And then also, we're going to have an author, Colette Sinnoh, Should I Tell My Secret? And this, both of these ladies are very, very special, and I think you will find the subject matter interesting. So anyway, those two ladies are going to be on tomorrow, and then also this coming week, we are going to be talking about 365 Days of Writing Dangerously with Barbara Abercrombie. If you wish to be a creative person, that's what's going to be shared with you on Wednesday. And then Positive Intelligence, Shahzad Shamim. This is a powerful, powerful book. It shows you how to work with other people. And if you have a tendency to sabotage yourself, you're going to find out how you can deal with it. And then we're going to be talking food on Friday with Marcello. Marcello is a highly recognized chef in New York. He's been cooking for 25 years, and he has come out with a book called The Story of My 25 Years as a Chef, and he has some marvelous Italian recipes. So I know that you'll enjoy all of it. So have that pad of paper and pen handy, because you will be getting some marvelous, marvelous recipes. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Well, the Olympics are going on, and there are so many, many fabulous, fabulous athletes. It's just a joy to watch the event, not just for the spectacular stage displays that they put on so many different levels, but to see all of these wonderful people that have worked so hard to compete in this global event, It's just a joy. And I wanted to share a story about an Olympic athlete. Her name is Mariel Zagunas, and she's a fencer. And this young lady, she's just absolutely dedicated to the sport of fencing. And she missed qualifying for the 2004 Olympics by just a hair's breadth, just very, very slight margin. And she has an interesting history. She started doing fencing when she was 10 years of age. And she said, for her, it was just a natural thing. Other friends liked soccer or dancing, but she was really attracted to fencing. She loved the sport, and she was a natural with it. And her parents, interestingly enough, had competed in a previous Olympic event in 1976, and they were rowers. So she found her own special niche, and she wanted to win a gold medal. And that has been her focus since she was 15 years old. And she's practiced, because there's so much to being an outstanding fencer. It's your footwork. It's having reflexes that are going to operate very, very quickly. And she found herself getting very anxious about this. Well, anytime you're wanting to compete in something as spectacular as the Olympics, your emotions can sort of put you into a tangle of knots if you're not careful. And she was just working so hard at this. She pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. And like I said, she missed qualifying for the 2004 Olympics just by a hair's breadth. But she still, she was in competition all the time. So to maintain her international ranking, she kept up the competition. And the final competition that she was going to do was in Germany. And she said she lived in Oregon, and she was really looking forward to just having a break because she was this very dedicated, committed athlete. She was really in the competitive spirit. But she said, I needed a break. I really did. So she had the break. Now, when she went into the competition in Germany, because of taking the break, there was a calmness about her. She had felt refreshed. And she said she was enjoying the fencing. She wasn't stressed about being the best or anything else. She just relaxed. And in a relaxing, she won. And she said she realized something that had never really crossed her mind before, that she had a chance to go to the Olympics. But she also realized that she said, you know, I just needed to relax. I needed to get away from the intensity of what I felt so that I could go back and I could win. Now, she went in as an alternative, for the games, and she was the first American fencer in 100 years to stand atop the podium as a medal winner. She, in Beijing, successfully defended her Olympic title, and she's going for her third gold. Now, I haven't heard if the fencing has been done already, but I thought her story is worthy to hear because it means sometimes we just have to lighten up a little bit so the best of what we have can stand up, demonstrate itself, and be an inspiration to others. So my hat's off to her. She is a champion. She will never, ever be anything less than that. Mariel Zagunas. She is a good example for all of us. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And we'll be talking tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.